we get things rolling this afternoon by welcoming back to the show a gentleman who will be right here in town a week from Wednesday night, an evening with Stephen Tobolowsky over at the Brewer Performing Arts Center. And Stephen joins us right now to beat the drum for said event. And Stephen, I hope you're still excited about coming, even after I've told you how dark and dreary it is in Maine today.
I am so excited to come. Yet, you know, when you said it was going to be chilly, I thought it was like 60, that means 65 degrees here in LA. But you said it was going to be like in the 30s?
Probably, if we're lucky. It's only 65 here in our studio.
Yeah, I remember I was asked to do the David Letterman show once, and they warned me that it was cold, and it was in the 40s.
Ooh, my goodness.
Well, yeah, that was seasonal. You had to wear your muffler to get through that thing. Yeah, it was cold. But I'm looking forward to Maine. I mean, it's a shame because two of my best friends who live in Maine over in Otisfield, they're out in L.A. now. So that's a shame. I'm going to be leaving them behind.
Well, yes, yeah, so the Maine people know when to get out of the state.
Yeah, that's right. That's exact. Do you know this? I don't know if you know this, but Annie, my wife, you know, she went to Maine because our friends had a house across the street that looked like it was up for sale and the price was right. And she said, you know, maybe we should think about having a home in Maine. And she went in on one of those really special days where the sky is about 6 feet off the ground and steel gray and cold and the snow started. And she said, nah, I'm not sure about this. This could be dangerous.
I mean, we're happy to hook you up with some good real estate agents when you're in town, if you'd like. Yeah. I'm sure they would enjoy that. Well, my goodness, you're out. You've been doing the book tour for some time. Your latest book, My Adventures with God, is absolutely wonderful. We've talked about it with you before. How is the tour going?
The tour has been very interesting in a lot of different ways. In one way, I have seen people from my past that I never expected to see at different stops that you never expected anyone would be there. In Washington, D.C., the guy who used to drive our carpool with us in elementary school, our kids, he had moved to Washington, D.C. He came to see the show. So I got to see Kenji again. Didn't expect to see Kenji ever again, but there he was in Washington, D.C. I was just in San Antonio like 4 days ago, which of course is horrifying now to think about, but there were old friends of mine from college who had moved to San Antonio. And I did a show just last night in the LA area. And one of the women came up to me afterwards, tears in her eyes, and said, well, she thanked me for the show. And she said she was one of the survivors of the Las Vegas shooting. Mm. And she was still shaken by that. And it's just amazing how much you see and how much you learn by traveling across the country.
Well, you'll be here next Wednesday night over at the Brewer Performing Arts Center. All the proceeds will benefit our friends at Congregation Bethel here in Bangor. And as a preview, you'll be reading from the book. You'll be telling stories about your remarkable career, but also talking about your return to your faith, which was such an important part of that book. And I thought absolutely fascinating because you're such a good writer and such a wonderful storyteller. But also, I think of you as quite a philosopher as well.
Well, I got a lot of questions about that in Miami and in Florida. I did a Florida swing, and they were asking what's the secret about a return to faith. And it's kind of a stereotype with the people in prison saying, well, I found God when I was in prison. But no, a lot of times when you've lived a certain amount of years, you have enough catastrophe that's entered your life that you kind of see the other side of yourself, and maybe you see the other side of the way life affects you. And it either causes you to make a break from the things that you knew as objects worthy of faith, or it makes you cling to them more. And in my case, it was the latter. I just began to see more and more and more of the miraculous in my life, which I think we all really kind of see, but we see it on such a regular basis that we kind of get inured to it. We kind of start to ignore it a little bit. And when horrible things happen to you and when great things happen to you, you become so much more sensitive to really the wonders of the world we're living in. It's really remarkable.
You have got so many projects going, and you continue to add to them with another brand new show, White Famous with Jay Farrow, which not only gives you a chance to add to the resume, but also allows you to do something few actors get to do, and that's bring a character back, in this case, from a previous TV series.
Incredible. It's incredible this doesn't happen. I'm playing Stu Beggs again, the character I played in Californication, and Tom Kaponis, who is the executive producer and writer of the show, was the writer of Californication, and his goal is to bring the entire universe of Californications back to life through White Famous, which is hilarious. I mean, the show is so funny. Jay Farrow is great. Jamie Foxx is on it. He's wonderful. And I have so much fun working on that show. I'm so excited. It again, when we did Californication, we'd be on the set, and sometimes David Duchovny and I and Pam Adlon, we'd start laughing so hard about the scenes we were doing, it was difficult to continue. And I'm finding the same things happening on White Famous. So I've had a blast. We finished the first season. We're doing 10 shows. It's on Showtime. And I'm looking forward. Hopefully we'll get a pickup and it'll be on next year. You know, you never know these days.
Well, you've got four series on the air with with One Day at a Time, which is so very good. We talked about it with you. My goodness, every bit is good, and in many ways even better than the original. I love that show. The first season was remarkable. Of course, you're on The Goldbergs, Silicon Valley on HBO, and then all of the voiceover work. My 3-year-old son and I absolutely love The Loud House and always enjoy it when Principal Huggins appears.
Yeah, The Loud House was great. The thing about the voiceover, when I was a young actor, I thought, boy, if I could only get into voiceover because, hey, I'm an actor, I have a voice. And I didn't realize how difficult it was. And one thing I've been able to do by doing The Loud House this year and doing a few of the voices in Disney movies and a Toy Story of Terror, working with Pixar, these people who work in voiceover and the directors and animators who work in animation, they are so brilliant. It is amazing to watch the process, and I learn so much every time I go into work with these people, and it makes me wonder, how did I ever think I could do this? And I was working with one woman when I was doing Justice League, the cartoon series for Warner's. And I'm doing a scene with her, and she is playing a little girl, the little girl's mother, and their pet dog. And she's doing it all at the same time. And she would go to one to one to one to one. It was amazing to watch. Just the talent that these people have is pretty stunning. Learning a lot. I think we talked about this before, and just as kind of in terms of my philosophy of life, is that I always thought, and I said this kind of glibly once, that you could either approach life either as a master or as a student, and it's so much better to be a student, and the wardrobe is so much cheaper, but it's so much better to approach life as a student. And now I realize that that is about as true a word as ever come out of this mouth here. It's so good to be a student, and I'm having a lucky time in my life by being a student in so many things now.
Stephen, doing the voice work, how is the process of your preparation different than it would be for like a traditional film or act or television role?
It's very different. First of all, you have to be aware of the arena, and the arena is between your lips and that 6 inches to the microphone. One of the mistakes I see young actors or inexperienced actors with voice work is they're moving their body around so much and they're getting up, but they don't get the idea. It's just that 6 inches. And when you do film or television, you're obviously in a scene and you're communicating directly to those people in the scene. But when you're doing voice work, who is your audience? One person, usually one person. If people are in the car and you're doing a commercial and you're doing a Toyota commercial, your voice is reaching that one person who's driving the car. Or if I'm doing the Tobolowsky Files podcast, I'm talking to the person who's falling to sleep listening to one of my stories. One person. And you have to really visualize who you want to tell that story to make your work as specific as possible. And if there are people out there in Maine who are listening to this, because the great thing about voice work, you do it all over the country, all over the world. You could be in Maine. You don't have to be in LA to do it. If there are actors out there that are interested in voice work, a very key part of it is visualize your audience and know specifically, are you talking to your brother? Are you talking to a stranger? Are you talking to your mom or your dad? Pick those people out. And that's one big difference. And of course, when you're doing a show for like Pixar, like Toy Story of Terror was what, like an hour long? That one project took 3 years to do. 3 years. And if you're doing one of the full-length animated features, it could take 5 years. So it is a commitment. And I marvel at the producers and writers and animators that stick through one of these projects from beginning to end. It's really daunting.
We're talking with Stephen Tobolowsky here on Downtown next Wednesday night over at the Brewer Performing Arts Center. An evening with Stephen. Tickets are available at the Briar Patch in downtown Bangor. With your ticket purchase, you get a copy of Stephen's book, My Adventures with God. You can also order tickets online. Go to our Facebook page for more information on how to do that. And all proceeds benefit Congregation Bethel. You mentioned the podcast, which we absolutely love. Will there be additional episodes down the road?
Yeah, I was, dear David Chen, he's just got a new big job and he's considering taking the big step of marriage, which drum roll for David. And so we're going to do like Netflix, is I'm writing now and we'll be recording and then we'll do like, we'll drop 12 episodes this coming spring. Something like that. That's the best use of our time that I'm away from home so much now, and David is too. It's the best way for us to do it. So yes, there will be more episodes coming.
We mentioned Principal Huggins. We were talking earlier in the show about your role as Principal Purdy in Mr. Peabody and Sherman. And you've played a lot of principals through the years as someone who is a teacher full time. First of all, I think I would love to have you as my principal. Why have you played so many principals?
It's the bald head. You know, I was, Adam Goldberg called me up and he said, Stephen, the real Principal Ball is coming over to Sony Studios. Can you meet with him for a press sort of venture? I go, sure. So I meet the real Principal Ball. He does have some hair, but he's tall like me, glasses like me. And I got to ask him questions. And I said, I know that we're doing a fictitious show, but in real life, when Beverly Goldberg would come to school to have a meeting with you or to see you, on this show, it's depicted like you're hiding under your desk, like you're just quaking in your boots. Were you really scared of Beverly Goldberg? And the real Principal Ball just stares at me and he goes, I was terrified. I was terrified. I'm still scared when I think about it. I wake up at night imagining what it was like when she would come to school. It really was one of the reasons I wanted to get out of education, or hope she would. It was just hilarious. So that part of the principal story was true. I think, and I was Principal Flutie, right? What was it on Buffy Vampire Slayer before
yes.
they got a new principal?
Yes. Yeah. And I actually was not aware of that and discovered it last week and actually watched that episode over the weekend, found a bootleg of it since it doesn't exist in any other format. And I watched it. I wish that they had kept you. You were very enjoyable in your scenes. A big, and I don't know if you remember this, a big part of the the humor was that you kept calling her by different names, Bunny, Becky, Betty.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember I was doing another show for ABC at the time, Blue Skies. I was under contract for ABC, and Joss asked me if I would come in and do the principal for this new series, Buffy Vampire Slayer. And I'm not really up on pop culture, so it sounded like it was kind of a comedy. And I didn't realize that there were horror elements to it as well. So I kind of was playing the principal kind of goofy. And later when they replaced me with another principal, I had just assumed it was because I was under contract to another show and I was not allowed really to do Buffy Vampire Slayer. But I think I heard Joss in some interview saying, oh, no, Tobolowsky was totally wrong for that part. So, you know, I think I always gave myself a pat on the back that I wasn't really fired from that part, but I think I really was.
I really thought I was. It is a show that me and my wife watched a lot as it was airing, and I thought that it worked great as a little bit of a palate cleanser type thing. Your comic take on the character was great.
You just do what you do. And it's very difficult when you do first shows. And it was difficult when we did One Day at a Time first shows, even though it is kind of the reboot of a classic old series. But every show, every series you do has a certain flavor and a rhythm and a kind of texture to it. And you don't know what that is in the first show. And you kind of have to find out what your relationships are with the people and the writers can't help you because they don't really know what the show is yet either. So quite often when I'm on a show, I get a lot of bald jokes the first week. You get a lot of kind of where the writers are trying to figure out where the humor's going to be in this character, or is it going to be serious? It's like a first date that goes on for way, way, way too long. And I think I'm trying to think if there was one show we did. I'll tell you an example, like Silicon Valley, when I was doing Jack Barker. That was one example where I don't think the writers exactly knew what they wanted Jack to do, but there was no warm-up period for it. I got onto the set and we all felt like we knew what was going to happen. And I think probably that's because of Mike Judge and Alec Berg. Those executive producers are so sharp, and they lead the actors in a direction they want the show to go in.
We keep discovering new things about you. And today, Carrie here unearthed the fact that there's not just one, but that there are two trading cards bearing your likeness. And that one, I believe it's not the Donruss, is it?
It's
Topps is going for a curly for $14 on eBay.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, that 2000.
And is that for Heroes?
It is exactly what it's for. The 2008 Topps Heroes Volume 2 series, the Stephen Tobolowsky autograph card, can be yours for $14 plus shipping.
That's
a good card value.
That was very. I don't know, Rich, did I tell you the story of me and Heroes? I may have.
You did, and it was one of my favorite parts of the book.
The broken neck and all that.
Oh yes, absolutely. And but also I think and feel free to share the story again, because I love it, of how you kept asking the producers where the story was going and whether it actually made sense or not.
Yeah. So the act one of the hero story is I asked the producer, what the hell am I doing? I don't know what this show is about. And the producer, Alan Arkosh, said very seriously, well, Stephen, just imagine that you're a bad guy who's pretending to be a good guy, who is really a bad guy, but in actuality is a good guy. And I've got, wait. I'm already lost. In other words, no one knew what this character was. But we had finished. I got the call, from our executive, Tim, and he called up and says, Stephen, we're going to kill you this week. I just thought you should know that we're going to get get rid of you. And I said, well, I figured you'd probably kill me sooner or later. And Tim goes, no, it's sooner. It's sooner. We're going to kill you sooner. So we shot the scene where Siler cuts off my head and eats out my brains. And and of course, he's crushed. And he comes up to me afterwards and he says, Zachary Quinto comes up to me after, are you okay, Stephen? Are you okay? And I said, Zachary, you didn't really hurt me. You just made me unemployed. That's all you did. I'm fine. So anyway, I just assume everything's okay. And about 6 weeks later, maybe 8 weeks later, I get a phone call from the Heroes production office that they want to reshoot my death. The only problem is, in between when we finish shooting and the 8 weeks, I had broken my neck. I had broken my neck and I was in a neck brace. And so the assistant director was saying, so Stephen, what could we do in terms of shooting if we took that neck brace off? And I said, well, you could like kill me. It would be, you know, I would die. He said, well, can you walk? I said, no, I can't walk without the neck brace. I can't move without the neck brace. You got to understand, guys, this isn't like us. It isn't like a twisted ankle. I have a broken neck. It's broken in 5 places. And so I said, I'll tell you what, do you have a high-backed chair? And they said, yeah, okay. What I could do is I could sit, and when you say action, I'll take my neck brace off and have the back of my head supported by that chair, and I'm not going to move. And then Kristen Bell could come out and do her speech about how daddy's dead and how sad that is. And so they go, great, we'll do that. So I'm sitting in the chair. They call action. I take my neck brace off. So now I'm sitting in a chair with a broken neck, with no neck brace. And Kristen comes in and sees me, kneels down and puts her hands on the chair, and the chair wobbles and my neck wobbles. And she eeks and starts to cry because she thought she killed me, but she had the presence of mind. Being a professional that Kristen is, she went ahead and did the speech. And that is the take they use in the show with me, with my broken neck, with no head, with Siler and with Kristen crying at my death. So that's a little trivia of that Hero show, whatever that show was about. I'm not really sure.
Well, that in itself, that story alone should double the price of that trading card.
I would think so. I would think so. I had one kid who sent me a Groundhog Day trading card. Like this week. And I'm going like, Groundhog Day? I don't think they have a Groundhog Day trading card. And he wrote back that he made it up himself. So he used the Topps format, took a picture of me from the internet, laid in my name and a place for me to sign. I thought, what an enterprising young man. You know, this kid's going to go somewhere or maybe go to jail if he keeps doing that.
Well, Stephen, we're so much looking forward to it. Next week's event here, an evening with Stephen Tobolowsky, next Wednesday night over at the Brewer Performing Arts Center. Now, you're also going to be taping our friend Danny Cashman's late night show, The Night Show. And I don't know, anything else planned? Are you opening a new car wash? Anything else going on while you're in town?
I'm working on my lobster rolls. Oh, I'm working on them. We'll see how that goes.
Fantastic. And again, dress warmly. It is not the cool that you get when it's cool in Los Angeles.
I'm looking forward to it. Wait, these shows have been a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to being back in Maine.
Well, we're looking forward to having you here next Wednesday night, 7:30 at the Brewer Performing Arts Center. Travel safely, Stephen, and we will see you in just over a week.
Thank you, guys. Can't wait.
Stephen Tobolowsky, next Wednesday night. Tickets available at the Briar Patch in Bangor. You can get them online as well. Go to our Facebook page for more information on how to do that. And again, your ticket purchase includes a copy of Stephen's book, My Adventures with God. You'll get to hear stories from his career and from the book. It's going to be a wonderful night next Wednesday, beginning at 7:30. All right, coming up, Alan Adams of The Main Edge has got movie reviews for us. We remind you, by the way, that our entertainment conversations on the program are brought to you by Friend and Friend in Orono. They're easy to find, easy on, easy off, exit 193 off Interstate 95, just 5 minutes from the Hogan Road.